We're on air now. Good evening if you're listening live. This is John Johnson on Radio Edge Talk. It is now Friday, 23rd of August, at about 10 to 5. I'm still in Dundee at the e-assessment conference. The conference has just finished. It's been a really interesting and fascinating day. I've been, as usual, surprised at what people think of as assessment and how assessment is much more interesting than you would think from when I think assessment. I'm talking here with Phil Race and Peter Hartley, who have been associated with assessment for a very long time. Maybe we could start, Phil. You could just fill us in on your background, where you come from, where you've been, what excites you.
I come from Washington and County Durham, as it used to be called. It's now part of Tyler Wear. I grew up there, got a degree and graduate PhD in science, went off to Wales for what turned out to be 25 years to teach chemistry, except I got more and more interested in teaching and learning during that time and eventually ended up as Professor of Educational Development. I took retirement 20 years ago, so I'm probably the oldest in the conference actually, and headed back to Newcastle, and for the last 20 years I've been a foot in the door of a university such as Leeds or Leeds Met or Durham, doing educational development, but the rest of the time travelling around, mostly on assessment and feedback and learning and that sort of thing. And I saw the advert for this conference online. I love using technology. I'm a good critic of technology, I would say. You know, I enjoy it, but I'm quite critical of it as well. And the conference was very well advertised, and so I was very happy to come along and run a little workshop this morning.
Brilliant. And this is the first time you've been to this conference. Yeah. And yourself, Peter?
Well, this is my third visit, so I'm a loyal attender. I'm now living in Scotland. I'm now semi-retired. I think I've had three careers. First as a teacher, on the chalk face as was, and then on the whiteboard, and then through to new technology. I'd spent about 20 years doing that and gradually got more and more interested in the learning and teaching side of it, and then moved by various slips of fortune into education development and ended up as a professor of education development down at the University of Bradford. Left there full-time a couple of years ago to finish off a major project on what we call programme-focused assessment, which is trying to take a much broader view of assessment than the standard, let's just have a look at the details that goes on in the modules. Let's look at the more broader things that students can achieve. And that's just finished, except it hasn't finished because people are still asking me to come and deliver seminars and workshops. And hopefully that's the start of another sort of springboard of interest in terms of what we can do with assessment. And I think possibly like Phil, I'd like to get rid of the term e-assessment.
So would I. Yeah, e-assessment will only have grown up when the E is dropped. Mm. Because we call it e-assessment, it's not mature yet. It's just regarded as something different. It's regarded as something special. When it is fully trusted and grown up, we won't worry about e-assessment. It'll just happen anyway. And I do worry when e-things are regarded as something different. You know, in a way, the sign there's an e-assessment conference means that people don't yet trust e-assessment to do the job. And at a number of the sessions today, people have been talking about, oh, well, we use e-assessment, but we only use it formatively. Mm-hmm. And that's a sign of its maturity. If people trusted e-assessment and it was real, they would use it for the important things, for measuring people's degrees and whatever. But they play with it on the fringes still.
But I think that one of the things about this conference, perhaps particularly this year, is that I've seen more examples of people using e-methods mainstream.
That's good.
And also integrating the e with the non-e and trying to use the technology as part of a kind of integrated package rather than either something that's totally separate that needs to be treated separately or something that's just a bit of an add-on and doesn't actually become part of the main sort of educational experience of the student.
I mean, some people today have been talking about dropping the digital from digital literacies, dropping the digital from digital media, and I suppose the next that would follow on is to not do digital assessment, just do assessment. And the other thing I've noticed today is the thing you picked up on there, Peter, about this wider assessment, which, I mean, from a primary school background in Scotland, we're beginning to think about profiling and that sort of thing, and this continual sort of narration of your learning Is that the sort of thing you mean?
Well, I mean, one of the things, as I say, we've been doing this project for 3 years now, trying to look for examples of broader types of assessment rather than the very detailed minutiae that you often get with a modular system. And we're a bit disappointed when we started to find very few examples, but more are coming along. Mm-hmm. And I think people are now starting both to try and see assessment as a much richer experience for the student and a much more meaningful experience for the student. And they're also trying to use technology to its best advantage. I mean, we now have a situation where virtually everybody's walking around with some sort of gadget, some sort of device which is, you know, 10 times as powerful as the desktop computers that we played with.
Absolutely.
When we were teachers. So given that you've got that, you've still got some problems of access, but given that you've eliminated a lot of the problems of access that we were talking about 10 years ago, you can now actually start using this technology.
I think also I'm getting increasingly worried that, you know, important assessment is still, in 2013, often done with a pen.
Yeah.
Now, the only time people pick up a pen is to do something like an exam, etc. This is dating back to the first written exam in 1791. You know, before that, assessment was all oral. But the University of Cambridge had the first exam in 1791. And the UK went blindly down the road. It's got to be written assessment. It's got to be written assessment. Written exams, written essays, written reports. Now, of course, we don't use pens anymore for these things. We use word processors, computers, whatever. So I've got the problem of what I often refer to as whodunit. We don't know with reports, portfolios, dissertations, who did it.
You don't have the signature.
Unless you talk, you yeah. might have the signature, but unless you talk to them, they might have downloaded it, adapted it, and all that sort of thing. So, you know, e-assessment has a big challenge to actually guarantee the ownership of the work, of the decision-making, if you like, or whatever it happens to be, and to be measuring the right things. Now, you can have the security, for example, of multiple-choice tests, if there's somebody guaranteeing it's the person sitting there at the computer. Mm-hmm. You're then fairly sure who's made the decisions, etc. But, of course, it's got to be synchronous for that. Otherwise, people will tweak what the questions are and what the answers are. So e-assessment has answers to all sorts of problems, but it's got to fit in with what assessment is for, which essentially is measuring individuals' achievement in particular contexts. That worries me as well, though, because life is about measuring groups' achievements. And we still, in assessment, only really try hard to measure individual achievement. And our present English Minister for Education, Michael Gove, is taking us back to the 18th century again with written exams and memory. So I think it would have done him a lot of good to be at this e-assessment conference and seen just how far the technology has advanced beyond the pen.
And following on that, now that I was actually brought up in Scotland, so I'm a product of a Scottish primary and secondary education system, for which I'm very grateful, because I think it was much broader than the one I could have got down in England, but then went down, spent all my teaching life down in England. But it'd be very interesting to see over the next few years whether there does become a kind of regional divide. And I think Scotland is actually in a very good place to do more innovative things, more experimental things, and perhaps hasn't got some of the pressures that are hitting universities down south of the border,
and has a good track record in the sort of Quality Assurance Act, because QAA Scotland, with its enhancement approach, I think actually caused a lot more good to happen than the rather more regulatory approach of QAA in England.
Yes, I think
Quality Assurance.
Yeah,
and of course, assessment in particular has to be quality assured. It's essentially what determines people's careers and lives. And south of the border, they're paying £9,000 a year to go and get a university education. They're paying £9,000 a year to get high-quality assessment. So everybody is demanding high-quality assessment, so quality assurance is needed. But the enhancement approach in Scotland, I think, caused more good.
Yes, I'd go with that as well.
And can I just pick up on the you seem to be maybe slightly critical of Mr. Gove's idea of assessing knowledge, what you know. Did I pick that up correctly? And maybe we should be looking at assessment as being assessing how you know, can a person operate in a team, can they learn? Is that?
I think maybe there's a bit of that you should be assessing not just the knowledge, but how you apply that knowledge. And that's where I think some of the technologies that we've seen today can actually make a real significant difference, the way that people can assemble evidence, audio evidence, video evidence, alongside, you know, text, and produce that in a way that can be verified, can be checked, can be quality assured, which gives a far richer statement of competence than the old. Mm-hmm.
Going back to
chaining people to the pen and the desk for 3 hours.
Going back to Michael Gove, he's not even succeeding in assessing knowledge. Einstein said knowledge is experience. Everything else is just information. All Mr. Gove is managing to assess is information. He's nowhere near assessing knowledge. Okay. And that's where the richness of digital devices can you get much more than just comes out of a pen. You can have audio, you can have video, you can have kinesthetic, you can have everything there. And Michael Gove is completely blind to this. And when the history of education gets written up in about 20 years, people will say, you just couldn't have made it up.
Yeah.
What's happening now?
Yes.
I realise we've been running for probably slightly longer than I suggested at the start. Could you maybe just give us an elevator pitch of what you were talking about today, and then maybe get one from each of you of a sort of pick that you really enjoyed from somebody else?
Well, my bit was looking at one of the devices in e-assessment, multiple choice questions, which can be used online, but they can be used on paper as well. And I was persuading people that there don't just have to be four options. You can have as many options you want in a multiple choice question, because there can be lots of different options. I was asking people to think, what multiple choice questions need are plenty of good distractors. There's the best option, the right answer, mm-hmm. but you need a lot of alternatives to get people thinking, why is that wrong? Why is that wrong? Why is that wrong? So I got them thinking, what else could you have as a distractor? What else could you have as a distractor? I was suggesting that a room full of students will develop 50 good multiple choice questions in an hour, whereas it would take one person about 2 weeks to get three bad ones. That the students still remember what the wrong answers are, they still remember what the wrong thinking is. And the act of getting groups of students to think of multiple choice questions and feedback to each of the options, there's hardly any better learning experience. The learning that would happen in an hour with 50 students generating multiple choice questions, because they're thinking of all the things that are right, they're thinking of what's wrong with the things that are wrong, how would you respond to what's wrong? They do. This is what people now call flipped classrooms.
That's just really flipped something in my head. I never thought of. And in other spheres that I'm interested in, people get students to design the assessment.
Yep.
But to design multiple choice, and it becomes then a really rich learning experience.
If you make it a little bit competitive and have some prizes for the best ones or sometimes the funniest ones, the students really enter into it. They love it, in fact. Now, of course, we need to, if we're using multiple choice as an assessment technique, students need rehearsal. There's no better rehearsal than designing the same sort of test.
Right.
And if you say to your group of students, yes, there'll be a multiple choice test at the end of all of this, four of the questions will be yours. They're all remembering each other's questions and each other's distractors and each other's right answers, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you've got your assessment becomes part of your learning, and probably for your learning as well, as we've talked
about.
Well,
there's a lot being written about assessment for learning.
Mm-hmm.
I go one stage further. I think it should be assessment as
learning.
If students are designing assessment, that's where the learning is happening.
Yeah, that just sounds brilliant. And I say, I'd never thought of that, and that popped away in another light bulb in my head. What do you think, Peter? Is there something that's, say, lit a lamp light for you? Is there something you thought was a highlight
today?
I've got
a couple of pages of notes, actually.
Yeah.
some great ideas out of the day. I think maybe a couple of things I would kind of highlight. One is, across the board, seeing some really interesting variations on uses of technology, use of iPads and take audio and video, and integrating those in the assessment really kind of intelligently. And I think the second thing that got very interested in this afternoon was this whole idea of open badges, the idea of creating, badges, in a sense, mini qualifications mm-hmm. that you can relate to criteria that you can validate and accredit and what have you. And the one from Mozilla. And I just think that the opportunities there to fill out the gaps in terms of what we don't formally assess, but which are nonetheless very valuable things that people do. I think there's a lot of opportunity there if we can only take advantage of it.
Thank you. And yourself, Phil, is there something that's stood out?
I think I just want to help to catalyzed the reaction for taking away the drudgery from assessment? Because I was called into one university in Ireland where they were spending three times as much time marking as they were actually teaching. And what people need is for more time, more of the contact time to be actually used with learning and interaction, this sort of thing, and less with routine sort of writing it all down and then trying to measure that. And the assessment can really do that when we stop measuring longhand writing in essays, etc.
Okay, thank you very much. I've certainly had a really enjoyable today. Day-to-day, I've had some great conversations. That this has been one of them. Can I say thank you very much, Peter and Phil, for being here and spending some cheese and wine time with me. And
can we go back to the cheese and wine?
You can go back to the cheese
thank
and wine, and I'll say good night to everybody else. Thanks for listening.
Good night.